You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We're going to have a great conversation today with Robert White, an executive coach and author of Leading an Extraordinary Life, leadership trainer, and fresh back from China. Welcome, Robert.
Great to be with you, Will.
Well, so now you've had lots of experience with experiential learning. You were the CEO of one of the granddaddies of Est, right?
Not of Est. I spent some time with Est as a consultant, but
you were the CEO of one of the companies that Est came out of.
Yes, of Mind Dynamics.
It's
the company that sponsored the first human potential movement training that I attended, which a cliche all these years later is to say that it changed my life, but it did. And I was very supportive of that company. I enrolled a lot of people in the training. And through that, they got to know me and asked me to come out to California and be interviewed by the founder, Alexander Everett. And 10 days later, I was president. That
changed your life pretty quick.
I took a 70% pay cut and moved my family to Sausalito, California.
And a 70% improvement in the quality of life, no doubt.
Oh, these California guys, they are all PR agents for the Sunshine State, you know.
Well, I mean, moving from wherever you moved into a world of empowerment and experiential learning, that's got to make a huge difference to the kind of life that you were living.
Well, for the first 2 years, I just ran the business. It had grown rapidly, and it was a bit of a mess. People loved the training, and thousands of people were going to it, but it was a little bit messy. So for 2 years, I just worked on that, and I constantly was being enrolled by Alexander Everett to attend the trainer training, and I was always too busy. Mm-hmm. But after 2 years, I did attend it, which was, you know, an incredible experience, another life-changing experience. And then I worked on taking Mind Dynamics abroad and set up 7 foreign subsidiaries. So that was for a young guy, early 30s, you know, an incredible experience.
Well, so how does that fit in with coaching? I mean, when you're working with somebody, an executive, you're coaching them. I don't see a direct connection to this experiential learning, the kind of thing that Est and what was it, MindSpring?
Mind Dynamics and then LifeSpring.
LifeSpring. How does that fit together?
You know, at that time, I believed so strongly in our training that when people asked for coaching, I just guided them away from it and said our training was enough, that it would change your perspective on life and that everything would clear up just in the process mm-hmm. of living life itself. Mm-hmm. It's embarrassing today to admit that, because it's now clear to me that in all fields of human endeavor, we certainly see it in sport, but certainly in business, in marriage, in politics, the really successful people all have coaches. And mm-hmm. part of it is we keep agreements with other people much more effectively than we keep agreements with ourselves. So one of the roles of a coach is to be an accountability partner, somebody you make a promise to. Some of it is learning a new discipline. You know, ultimately, coaching is about attitudes, habits, and behaviors. The trainings are more about attitudes, about where mm-hmm. you're coming from. But when you get into the doing, you'll start to reveal whatever the next step is for you in terms of accomplishment and joy and satisfaction or fulfillment. And that's where the coach comes in, to catch you doing some things right mm-hmm. and also give you some help when you get blocked, when you run in or up against a barrier. Those trainings are priceless. I mean, they're an incredible experience. the two companies that I founded and led have 1,300,000 graduates. I mean, that's been my life. But in the last perhaps 10 years, I've grown to have a deeper appreciation for the follow-up to those experiences, to getting a coach.
Yeah, well, that's been part of my understanding. You know, there are a lot of coaches around in Orange County here in California, and that was certainly something after being part of the Sandler training program for 18 years, that was an opportunity for me. What I was looking for was how to transform an organization. And if I had a coaching relationship with someone, what I discovered when I did have some coaching relationships was they had to then take what they were learning and go back and try to convert, transform the rest of the organization. And they weren't always equipped to do that transformation. And right. That's where I found the entrepreneurial operating system really helpful, because it doesn't attempt to transform just one person. It attempts to transform the whole organization, first with the leadership team and then all the way through. And that, to me, is what I've been excited about. And it sounds to me like in the experiential learning, did that often include an entire leadership team?
We had a large general public training business, people from all walks of life, but we also focused in on, you know, we had 14,000 graduates at Chase, JP Morgan Chase. We had 18,000 graduates at Duke Energy and Progressive Insurance and Textron, and the list goes on and on. And these were people that were up against culture change. They were having that experience where a few people would go out, go through one of these trainings and come back and find out that the water cooler or the coffee room conversation defeated whatever gain they had made just a week or two earlier. What we learned is you've got to get a certain momentum in a company to make a major change in culture. And, a lot of different people have been credited with that saying that culture eats strategy for breakfast, you know, but shifting a culture is what allows something like the Sandler skills to actually be implemented. And yes. when I first read Traction, which is kind of a connection we have, is that I'm a big fan of Gino Workman and those folks. What I saw was kind of the total package. And I'm selling, this is like I was being interviewed about my book once, and some interviewer said, you know, there's always a snarky question in those interviews. And the snarky question was, well, this is just another personal development book, and what makes it different? And I said, actually, all personal development books are derivative of Think and Grow Rich and the Holy Bible. The moment I said it, I realized I'm on this show to sell my book. I just confessed it's derivative. I think for especially the medium-sized growth business, I've really never seen a total system as good as EOS, frankly. And I've looked at a lot of different things. And again, my emphasis over the years in working with companies and with executives and with entrepreneurs has been on the individual, on their attitudes, habits, and behaviors that get in the way of getting what they want, or that support getting what they want. And I wasn't dismissive of good management. It's just that I focused on leadership, on that those qualities.
What I have learned is that every successful executive needs to have three different resources. One is an operating system, and EOS is one operating system. That's pretty good. I like it, and I see it's very valuable and helpful and very effective. And secondly, they need a coach. They need a personal coach, because that coach is working specifically with them. And then thirdly, one real valuable thing is a peer group, an executive peer group, where they can share with each other. But it's those three together. Very often I've heard Vistage chairs see EOS as a threat to them or as competition. And it's not. It's not at all. But Vistage cannot do what EOS does, and EOS implementers do not do anything like what a Vistage group can do. And likewise, I'm not a coach. I don't coach my people. I might listen and hear how they're going to proceed, but my job is to teach them how to use this magnificent system called EOS, and that's delightful. So tell me about where you want to go now that you're back here, back from China, and I want to hear something about your experience in China, but tell me where you want to go now.
I love that explanation about Vistage and EOS. They're both great tools for people running a company. I'm the third leg of that stool, and that I work with the individuals on, again, blocks, barriers, opportunities, things that they don't see. You know, seems to me Asia operates a lot on these sayings that are thousands of years old. One of them from Zen Buddhism is that fish do not describe water very well.
I agree, right.
You know,
right.
Whatever it is that we're swimming in, we tend not to notice it. And that's the person that I'm looking to work with. I'm looking for the person where I could add some insight, ask some good questions, help them get clear, again, about what works, what doesn't work in their personal leadership contribution. And quite often that does tend to extend to the top team after a while, either one-on-one or as a group. Mm-hmm. What you're working on are the cultural aspects, the purpose, the vision, the values. And like, I know those are addressed in the EOS to some degree. We actually do the deep dive into, why does your company exist? Why do you exist as a human being? What's your personal purpose? You know, I love the name of your show, and that, you know, that kind of a highway metaphor. A lot of us in America, particularly, our lives revolve around cars and highways. My friend, the late John Denver, wrote a song called Sweet Surrender. And one of the great lines in it is, lost and alone on a forgotten highway. Experienced by many, but remembered by few. An amazing number of executives in when they really tell the truth are lost and alone on a forgotten highway. They are incredibly smart. They're incredibly driven. They're incredibly hard workers. They've just got so many great qualities, but they tend not to pay much attention to themselves and to their learning, their growth, you know, beyond conventional education, a few corporate seminars, maybe a book now and then, but really taking a deep dive into, why do I exist? What are my values? Really, my lived values. What is my strategic intent in my life personally and for my organization? So that's the kind of work I like to do. I'm looking for people that are on that kind of growing edge. You know, they're ready. I have a website. Everybody has one, extraordinarypeople.com. An amazing number of people, you know, when people reach out through the website, it's time stamped. An amazing number of those messages are stamped 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m. These are executives who can't go to sleep with a problem. And generally they set up their life to have no one to talk to. That's kind of the value of you coming in as an EOS consultant or a Vistage. You know, at least it gives some kind of an outlet to have people to talk to, because you cannot share your doubts, your fears, your problems within the people in your own company. So that's my role. And that's what I like to do.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. How many coaching clients could you have in your practice at one time?
It depends on the setting. One-on-one, that I have a limit of 10. If somebody drops out, then I add someone. With the group coaching, there's really no limit. This is what I've learned courtesy of the virus. I mean, I had done group coaching online in China, using the platform called WeChat. And when I came back, you know, it's Zoom. It's the way we're working today. But I put together groups of 12, and that's an arbitrary number, but it's my number. And I think right. that's interesting because that's also the number Vistage chose. You know, it's the number of disciples back to 2,000 right. years ago.
Right, right.
Or the number of eggs in a cart. You can go on and on with this. But we put together groups of 12, and we just ask that they're not competitive. They're not in competitive businesses. The way I think about it is that I'm accountable for about one third of the value. And one third is their commitment. You know, they're going to put this first in their lives and their business lives. And then one third happens between those 12 people in becoming resources to each other. And so the results are fantastic. I love doing it. Plus it's fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if you are doing what you love and you're great at, it's going to be an enormously satisfying experience.
Yes.
And that's what I find. One of the things I find so extraordinary about EOS is talking about this whole matrix of the things that you're not good at and don't want to do, the things that you're good at and don't want to do, the things that you're good at and you want to do, and the things that you're great at and love doing, and how we get people in that upper part of the matrix and delegate everything else away. It just seems to me that so many executives are so busy that they really take on all these things that they think they have to do, they ought to do, but they really don't want to. And in doing so, they have no time to be human beings, to follow the passions that are, you know, that are so important to them. It's just astounding when they can really make that shift. Do you find that to be true as well?
Just absolutely true. You know, a recent thing that's happened for me personally, and maybe some people watching or listening today can identify with this. I find myself quoting two people that I wish I didn't quote, and I increasingly quote them. One is my ex-wife, who had a special kind of wisdom that she imparted to me during our time together. But it just irritates me that I find myself quoting her. But the other one is Stephen Covey. You know, in his book, he talks about the distinction between the urgent and the important. And what tends to capture executive attention is the urgent. And they usually have arguments about it, by the way, in the real world, not the theoretical world of a book. In the real world, I had to pay attention to that. But when you back away, take a look at how do they spend their time in their life, it is not unusual to find a CEO spending 80% of his time on people issues, not on really on the business, not on his markets, his customers, his systems, which is one of the things I learned from Traction, right? To pay more attention to systems. I mean, in my training companies, we built up systems that really worked, but we were unconscious about it. We couldn't back away and see the parts that were really working and the parts that were not. But they worked. I mean, that's how we get to 1,300,000 graduates. But when you're constantly putting out fires with people, that's just it's frustrating. It's not productive. It's that classic 80% of your energy going toward 20% of your results. It just doesn't work. And in order to deal with people issues, you first have to deal with your own. You know, I have two adopted special needs kids. Levi, we adopted at 3.5. And I mean, if he's here with us, he would say this to you openly. So I feel comfortable saying it. You know, Levi has 6 cigarette burns on his back in a pattern. That's what his life was like before he joined our family. So he was filled with rage. It took a lot of therapy, a lot of work, and a lot of pain, frankly. But ultimately, he's turned out great, by the way. He's really a wonderful young man. I was seeing this child psychologist, and I'd had a particularly bad week with Levi. And this therapist told us right away, Levi at that time was 6, I think. And he said, a 6-year-old will not benefit from cognitive therapy. It's just impossible. You will, you, Robert, and his mom. So we brought Levi twice a week. He would sit with Levi for 5 to 10 minutes, and the rest of the hour was with one of us. And so I'm sharing with him that I'd had a terrible week. And the metaphor that he used for me is he said, you have to understand that Levi's feelings are totally shut down, as they should be. If you had endured what he endured, you don't trust adults. You certainly don't trust fathers and mothers. So that bonding is what has to happen. And but his metaphor was, he said, what you have to know is that Levi's highly developed in terms of his mental abilities. That's how he has learned to survive in the world. Now, we already knew that. We knew that, like, he would memorize the route in a car from sitting in the back seat.
Which,
by the way, my former wife really appreciated, because she was perpetually lost. And Levi always knew where to go. But he said the metaphor is, you have to imagine that you're like an old-fashioned jukebox, you know, with the keys that are like A14 and B17 and, you know, that kind of thing. And Levi sees you like that, and he knows which buttons to push to activate the parts of you that he can control. And
to get what he wants.
To get what he wants, right? And he's full-time on it. And what I've seen is how that shows up in business. You know, you might spend, let's say, 1 hour a week really deeply thinking in aggregate, thinking about looking at a person on your leadership team. I promise you that person's looking at you for more than an hour a week. Figuring out how to manipulate you to get what he or she wants. And they know what B17 is on you. You know, and it might be that I work with a client right now. His biggest problem is he cares too much. Now, there are a lot of business people that don't care enough. But there are business people that care too much, and he wants to solve all of their problems.
Yes, indeed.
So it's like, and you know, he went to a Jesuit university. He, you know, that's kind of what they teach there, right? You got to take care of the people in your life. Well, he bought it. So this incredibly smart, well-educated, I mean, just a super guy. But his staff manipulates him like he's like a marionette on a string, and the other metaphor, right? He's dancing to their tune, and in the meantime, they're not getting done what they need to get done, and they've got huge opportunities in front of them. So I'm working on him to remember his purpose, vision, values, and his role as a leader.
Yeah, the role is very important. What is my, what are the five things that I'm responsible for doing to help this organization accomplish its goal? And stopping everything else.
And sometimes people in organizations work their way up to leadership by being a good manager. And one of the hallmarks of good managers, whether we like it or not, is they husband information. They hold information tight. That's what gives them their power, that they know something that the other people don't know. Therefore, they get to be a manager. You get into a leadership role, it reverses 180 degrees. It's a flip. Now your job is to share information, to talk about purpose, vision, values, to talk about your threats, to talk about your opportunities, to talk about what we're up to in this 90 day period. Another thing I learned from Traction is, you know, pull things down to 90 days and in terms of goals and commitments, helping an executive see that kind of a pattern. That often goes back to childhood or early learning experiences, or an early mentor operated in a certain way and you admire that, or you, or you've done the opposite. Somebody operated in a certain way and you say, I'll never do that. You know, I'm going to go just the opposite. Both of those are just reactions, and they tend not to work very well.
You know, you mentioned being able to push buttons in talking about Levi. My wife and I took on two feral kittens. Feral kittens, right? And so in Santa Ana, they're colonies. They're three or four colonies of feral kittens. And there's people there who go out regularly to feed them. And of course, these feral kittens are totally vulnerable. I mean, there's all sorts of animals that come through looking at predators. And so another woman selects some of those and brings them home and then distributes them to people like Mary and me. Well, it's amazing. Now, we've had domestic, just regular domestic cats, and learned how to live with them. But feral cats know how to push buttons. They know exactly how to protect themselves. They know then, and it becomes very interesting to see. I mean, for the most part, they will not allow us to touch them until they want something. And when they want something, they're all over my wife. They're sitting in her lap. They're hugging her. I mean, it's amazing just to see how they are live their lives, but they get what they want.
Survival is a powerful, powerful motivator. And we Absolutely. have people that come into our organizations with stories that if they were told will curl your toes, you know, that things have happened to them, and they process those events in their life in a way that works for them interimly. And the expression that is in my book is short-term pleasure, permanent pain. Mm-hmm. They get what they Absolutely. Want short-term. They don't get love, respect, acceptance, you know, the next big job. Mm-hmm. They constantly defeat themselves. But a leader has to work with people like that, and you don't know their real story. You don't know that underlying belief right. system that gets in the way of right. they being successful in their jobs. I don't recommend that my clients become experiential learning experts. I just want to, you know, that's what I've spent my life doing. But
right.
I've also been in their job of running, you know, ARC International had 240 employees, 70 full-time trainers, 15 offices mm-hmm. scattered around Asia. And mm-hmm. So I had to learn about not theory, but practice, about what's going to work to move our organization forward. And what I want to do is I want to be that, you know, if you've got a hematoma in your brain, you know, you don't want to go read a book and try to operate on yourself. You know, it might be better to get a skilled surgeon in for a short time.
Right. Well, you know, it's been interesting. There are some leaders in my clients who have said, one particular leader saying, you know, I've discovered in this EOS process that I'm way too overbearing, that I demand all of these things rather than facilitating and helping and supporting my leadership team. He went out and got a therapist and now has a coach. And he's talked about how that has transformed the way not only that he deals with the people on his leadership team and the rest of the people in the organization, but also it's changed the way that he deals with people at home.
Wow. That is the kind of story that I live in and I love. You know, it's inspiring. Yeah. And the interesting thing about it is that just a therapist can help with really deep-seated work. But they almost always do not understand business. The coach, in many cases, doesn't understand the deep work that needs to be done. So, there are people like me. I'm not the only one who can combine the two a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a therapist. I've actually referred clients to a therapist a few times. I am highly, highly picky about that choice of therapist. But I know something about business and I know something about the human condition. And I think for somebody that's looking for a coach, that's what you want. You want somebody that's been there and done that and that knows something about the human condition, can listen carefully and listen beyond your story. I mean, one thing you find out about executives, they've all got a great story.
Yes. Well, that's very often how I invite people onto the show, by saying, hey, I have, you know, I do a radio show every week and I have heard that you have great stories to tell. and because they do, they all have great stories to tell. And what's interesting is that sometimes those stories are stories of success and sometimes they're stories of failure that they had to work through. And those are sometimes the most interesting ones.
I've certainly learned the most from the two biggest failures in my life, one being divorce and the other being the failure of ARC. I just, incredible learning. That's when I read Traction, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
really?
When I was in the middle of beating myself up about firing 240 people and closing 15 offices, that's when I read Traction.
Wow, amazing. So what did that do for you, reading Traction?
I had a new appreciation for management in a way that I had not had before, as opposed to leadership. And I found out what I was doing that worked and didn't work in what I would call a sloppy role definition in my own company. Mm-hmm. And I hired leaders to be managers. I hired managers to be leaders. That whole thing in Traction about analyzing your people's strengths, it's so clear. It's not academic, you know. I read it and I went, yep, I see what I did wrong.
I've found that to be so true of EOS, that it is extremely simple, not easy,
right,
but simple. Yes. And I think that many leaders take that simplicity and think that they can best implement it in their company themselves.
Yes.
And, you know, that's back to your doing brain surgery on yourself, because having somebody there to tell you, somebody there who's experienced a variety of implementations, yep, in various companies, and there's also is committed to that process, not committed to keeping my job.
Well, and that the process is proven, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
Look, I don't know how an academic person would experience Traction and the whole EOS system. I know how business people react to it, because I've talked with my clients about the same kinds of ideas, and I've recommended the book to them and said, you know, you might want to consider a consultant. Not one of them has ever said, well, this is too complicated, or this is too academic, right, or this is too much theory. It's practical. Right. And my approach with coaching is that if people do not shift in their attitudes, habits, and behaviors, then I failed. Or we failed. I guess more accurately, we have failed. You know, I'm not the only player in the coaching relationship.
Right. That's right.
I have fired a few clients.
We all have. We have. If we're honest with ourselves, we have taken the step of courageously confronting and saying, it's just not working out.
I'm not the right guy for you.
Well, Robert, this has been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed it. And welcome back to this side of the Pacific.
Thank you. It actually is great to be back in Colorado.
Good. Excellent. We won't hold that against you.
Thank you.
So what would you like to, you've got the microphone now, what would you like to tell people? Business leaders, business owners.
Your life can enjoy not only increased results, but also joy, satisfaction, and fulfillment. And there's a way to do that. It's not unknown. It's not a secret. It is, like you said, and that sentence is in my book, it is simple. It's just not easy. And having a coach. One of my favorite stories from China is that there is a tennis player named Li Nan. And I first knew about her because if you go to Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, the big cities, you see this beautiful woman on, 20-foot tall billboards. And I was curious, who is she, because she's like everywhere. So I find out her story is that she was a professional tennis player who got to about number 100 in the world and was stuck there. And if you're number 100 in the world, you are a very good tennis player, but you are carrying your own bags, you are flying coach, you are sharing a room at a Holiday Inn Express. It is not glamorous at all. And you're getting your butt kicked. So she quit. Mm-hmm. And 2 years later, there was a major event, major tennis tour pro event in Shanghai where she lived. Five other great tennis players, names you would recognize, went to her house and said, "This is unacceptable that you quit. You have incredible talent. We all saw it. And you have terrible coaching," because she was part of the Chinese sport system, the Communist Party controlled mm-hmm. system, where they basically just beat people up all the time and push them. This woman sold her car, borrowed money from her family, and went out and hired five coaches. One for technique, one for fitness, one for nutrition, one sports psychologist. How's that? You know, she got the help she needed. Oh, one for flexibility, basically Pilates. And she's the only Chinese woman that ever won a tour event. She went back into the tour. She became ranked in the top 10, and she won a major. First and to this date, only Chinese tennis player to win at that level. And the way she did it is she got outside of the norm, and with the support of some people around her who believed in her and her family, but also these five superstars, she jumped into the big game. That's my wish for the people I work with. If you're ready to play a big game, if it's not me, find someone else that's been there, done that, and can help you be better than the fish that can't describe water, where you see things in a different way, and you're more equipped for this priceless privilege of leading in organizations.
And the magic really happens when you begin to ask for help, doesn't it?
It does, and it's something that I have struggled with personally all my life, so I have been there.
Well, this has been wonderful. Wonderful, Robert. How will they get in touch with you if they wanted to get in touch with you?
ExtraordinaryPeople.com is one way. And the email address is Robert@ExtraordinaryPeople.com. I'm on LinkedIn, of course. And holler, find me.
All right.
Let's talk.
This has been wonderful. This is just one more example of how businesses thrive in California.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.